Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, the co-host, and with me today will be Max Cohen from Cottagers Confidential and Lydia Campbell from Hamian.com. In this episode, we will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Birmingham City at Craven Cottage. On top of that, we have some interesting topics to discuss in the Cottage Talk roundtable to start the show, which included discussion on Lydia's recent article on Savisa Jokanović. We also will be debating the goalkeeper situation, which could be very interesting. We have much to get through before we do anything. I have to welcome my co-host to the show first, Mr. Cohen. How you doing?
I'm doing great as always, Ross. Another really good home fixture on the weekend. Hopefully this will tell us a lot about what the Fulham side is looking like into the festive period.
Absolutely. This is a massive match, but it seems like we say that each and every show that you and I do, Max, but this one really is massive as we are looking forward to where Fulham are on the table. They obviously need all 3 points, and this is a team that they should be beating. So we will be going through that. Before we do anything else, I have to welcome my co-host. We were talking about this off air. Lydia, I think it's been about 5 years since you were last on Cottage Talk. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you, Russ. Yeah, I think it has. I think we were last talking about Danny Murphy, so quite a while ago.
Wow. It's been a long time. Before we go any further, please tell everyone a little bit about yourself. You do write from Hamian.com, but you do have another interesting job as well.
Yeah, well, I've been writing for Dan Crawford at Hamian.com since I was about 15 or 16. But I'm trying to make that into a full-time job at the minute. But at the same time, I have to pay the bills. So I'm a teacher, as I teach half the time, and half the time I'm over in Manchester working for the BBC over here.
So I'm
doing quite a lot of stuff, trying to get into journalism full time, but at the same time have to be practical, so doing a lot of teaching, so a lot of time spent in schools.
That's great there, Lydia, and listen, it's an honor having you back on. Hopefully you will be a frequent visitor to Cottage Talk. So let's get into the show and to the beginning, which I call the Cottage Talk Roundtable, a couple of interesting topics for us to debate. We will start with your article here, Lydia, and it's entitled, Why Sacking Slav Isn't the Answer. You broke this up into 3 parts. So what I will do is I will mention the first part and then have you give us a summary, and then I'll go to Max and get his thoughts on it. Here's the first part of your article. You write, instant success is rare. We should be thinking about the long term. Okay, Lydia, talk about your article in general, and then let's talk about this part of your article.
Well, for this part, I mean, my understanding of football at the minute is that if a manager or a team doesn't get success in the first few months, their job's on the line straight away. And I think that this is becoming a cycle that clubs can't succeed. They're not able to succeed. There's no one able to stick at a job for a considerable length of time. The sort of time regular people might be in a job. It doesn't seem to happen with football. But the problem with this for me is that every time somebody goes through a bad spell, they're in danger of getting the sack. Often they are sacked. And then the same thing happens again. A manager maybe gets signed. Maybe has a good spell, good time for a while. Then as soon as they hit a bad spell, they're sacked again. And then the clubs are back to square one. How is anybody supposed to succeed when clubs are not thinking about the long term?
It's a wonderful point, and it's something that I'm glad that you wrote, because I agree with you 100%. And I just want to throw this out. You have a manager that has built something. This is his third season with Fulham Football Club. He came in the middle of that first season, but this is his third season, and we are building something. Now, results come and go. The results aren't what we like. There is something going on there. He has brought in his own system. So, Lydia, for me, I want to see it through, unless, this is my opinion, we were in danger of relegation. Then you have to make a change, I feel, because you're thinking of survival. But this is not that situation. This is a situation where you're trying to figure out your season. You're still in there. And I agree with you. You need to think of the long term. But I think, like you, that it's crazy that we always think about the short term instead of the long term.
Yeah, I mean, my problem at the minute isn't that I think everything's going well at Fulham.
Right.
I mean, of course not. We're down mid-table. We're closer, I think, you know, the bottom of the table than we are at the top at the minute. It's not where we want to be. But at the same time, I struggle to understand how a change of manager at this stage in the season is really going to improve that. I don't think it is. I think if Slavisa Jokanović has his finishing, you know, a lot considerably lower than where we want to be, potentially in the summer, we can let him go. But I would rather give him that time, give him another window, give him the time, and then we can actually see, rather than making a panic decision halfway through a season and then end up with the same kind of guy, someone who's only going to last maybe a year, 2 years in the job. I don't see how it benefits us.
Okay, excellent. Max, what are your thoughts about this part of Lydia's article, and do you agree or disagree with her point here?
Yeah, I definitely agree with the main point there. And it's insane how in recent times football has become such a results business, you know, judged by instant success, as Lydia mentioned. And another great stat she had in the article was that Slavisa is currently the sixth longest serving manager in the championship. And that's just astounding, considering it seems, for me, it seems he's only been here since 1.5, 2 years. It's not a huge amount of time, yet he's a sixth. So, I mean, if that was a league table, he'd be in the playoffs in terms of the longest serving. So it's crazy to think people are already calling for his head. And even more remarkable for me, considering it's Fulham supporters, just think about 3-4 years back when we had that terrible year, and then a terrible really 1.5 years with all the different managers we had. When we had Yol, we had Muhlenstein, we had Magat, we had Simmons, and then we had a mixture of, you know, the interim managers, Peter Graham, Stuart Gray, all those. It was just such... there's no stability in the club, and everyone recognized the need for stability, and that's what Slavius has brought. And it's sure he's having a poor run of form now, there's no doubt about that, but I agree with Lydia, it's not a crisis. You know, we're not in danger of relegation. Obviously we're upward looking and we're farther down than we'd like to be, but to call for the sacking of Slavius now would ruin all the stability, all the philosophy, all the hard work he's put into the team over the past 2 years. And that just takes us back to square one, which got us relegated and which got us almost relegated to League One.
Right. This is my opinion. If we were to sack him, say we get a bad result, we lose to Birmingham City and there is a decision to sack him, I'm fearful that then this season becomes one that could go worse before it gets better. And that, to me, that can happen when you change a manager. You sometimes get those instant results. It does happen, but then you also have situations where it can go the other way, and that, to me, if you do it, I think it throws out all of the work that had been done prior. That's why I'm against this, unless, like I said, we are in a relegation battle and you're just looking for survival. All right, Lydia, right back to you. Funny, we're talking about survival, then we're talking about sacking midseason. You write, unless completely necessary, is a mistake, and I completely agree with you. Talk about this part of your article.
Well, here I'm more thinking about, you know, like you were saying a minute ago there about this stability. I think that although things are difficult at the club at the minute, if we keep the guy in charge, if we keep Slavisa Jokanović there, keep with his philosophies in the meantime, it will be better than changing things up, and then you're left with that period of uncertainty. I mean, when you think of whenever we sacked Kit Simons 2 years ago, we took a heck of a long time to actually bring Slavisa in. It was a long time. And what happened then was we had another period of inconsistency. You know, the players didn't really know what they were doing. The person who was there is only an interim manager who knew that himself. Sort of thinking, well, you know, I can't really bring my own ideas to this. Then what happened was it actually took Jokanović 7 games before he got his first victory. Now, I know some people might say, no, we'll definitely, you know, if we change it now, we'll get better results straight away. But if it's going to take that length of time after bringing someone in, I mean, that just throws everything into the air for me. And my problem as well when it comes to the board is they're under a lot of pressure to bring someone in who's going to fit with their criteria. But right. The problem there is, well, they don't have that time. They don't have time. they have to make essentially a quick fire decision. And the problem with that for me is that they will more often than not bring out the right person. They need time to make a decision. So if they were to change him in the summer, if, you know, the rest of the season doesn't go very well, at least at the end of the season, they've given themselves a great deal of time to make their mind up.
See, that's where I completely agree with you, Lydia. If you were to make a change, that's when you make the change, when you have time to evaluate how you want the next season to go and how you want Fulham to move forward. If you're doing it now, you're dealing with someone that has a certain system. You're going to bring in someone else. And who's to say that it's not going to take a long time like it did last time? I'm glad that you brought up that point. It took a long time to bring Slavisa in. And in that meantime, we just went downhill from that point on. And then it became a salvage project. And he kept us in the league. I mean, it really got to that point. That first season for him was really a loss. It was about survival. And that is my fear. If you did it now, you might get a little bit of a jump, but it could go wrong after that part. You're not building anything because you have all these players in place that are playing for Slavisa. We can agree or disagree how well they're playing, but they are playing for Slavisa in a certain system. And then you're going to have a coach come in that might have different ideas, and then things could go in a different direction. That is my fear. That's why if you want to do this, I think it's best to do it after the season and then evaluate what you're looking for Fulham to move forward. Max, your thoughts on all this?
Yeah, I just agree. And another point I'd like to bring up is that when you sack a manager, a crucial part is you have to know who you want to bring in. And as Lydia mentioned, you know, the last sacking of Kit, we had these two interim managers for a number of months, and there was such uncertainty and instability. And that really let that season just go. That's what I mean, a terrible run. And the season was basically gone. Even when he appointed Slavisa, it was always going to be a fight against relegation rather than upward looking. So I think it's just silly for people to call for Slavisa's head this early on, especially given all the reasons we've listed. It's just distracting from what's the real issue here. And I think a lot of it, I think we're going to get to this next, but just a little preface, is that he doesn't have full control over the transfers, you know? A big part of being a manager in modern football, and something that's changing in terms of what the ownership of Fulham wants to do, is that the manager controls the transfers. He puts a team on the pitch, and he controls what players he'll get in that team. And in this moment, he doesn't have that kind of control. And I think if he's not getting the top targets he wants, and if he's getting players maybe he doesn't want, he's not going to get his optimal results. He's not going to get the best team out there that's going to give us the best chance for success. So I think in some ways he's being hindered, and you cannot really blame that on the manager in this situation.
Okay, excellent there. Max, all right, with you, right back over to you. Your third part is very interesting. This is something that I definitely want to talk to you about. Klein is gone. It's time to give Slav a go in the transfer window. So let's talk about this, because this is an opportunity. I think that the board, Shad Khan, Tony Khan, should give more say to Slavisa in this transfer window. That's just my opinion. I know that they have the both boxes checked system, but I think that they need to cater this January transfer window to what he needs to win and get us into the top six. So I hope that with Klein gone, that Slavisa has more say. I don't know if that's going to be the case, but that's my opinion. Please share with us what you wrote.
I think, you know, the Craig Klein issue has been a long term, or it's been something that's been going on at the club for maybe a year and a half, which is a real shame, because I think ever since Klein was brought in, straight away, there was that issue there. You know, Slavisa quite clearly was not happy with how much control Klein has had in the transfer window. And I think even if some of the players who Slav brought in didn't work out, or the players that Klein's brought in haven't worked out, I think the problem was more that Jukanović was clearly very unhappy.
Right.
And I think that stress, you know, filters down into the playing staff. And I think that this has caused unnecessary issues at the club. And I think it has hindered the progress. I think, you know, some of the rumors that have come out are insane, you know, of Klein hammering on Jokanovic's door, asking why certain players aren't playing. Now, this is all speculation. You know, sure. Bob has never come out and actually stated what went on. And I can understand that. But I think that if someone is going to be scrutinizing or having so much of a say into the transfer window whenever he doesn't actually have any idea about the tactics or anything that the manager wants to use, I don't think that works.
And I totally agree.
Yeah, and I think if you're one of those players who has been brought in by Klein's system where the manager has clearly not wanted, I mean, that just makes for an unhappy camp. And it makes players feel undervalued, it makes players annoyed. That then filters into the guys who are maybe sharing a room with, things like that. It just, it causes so many issues underneath the radar that we can't see, apart from whenever they're on the pitch and not performing very well. I mean, that's my issue. If you have a very happy camp, if you have a very happy squad, generally your results are going to be better. But that unhappiness there, those problems in behind the scenes, Slavisa Jokanovic making these angry outbursts to BBC Radio London, I mean, it just shouted out to me unhappiness and real problems behind the scenes. And then I think the results have, partly because of that, have been a lot less than what we would expect of them.
Okay, interesting. And just want to mention in your article, it sounds like you agree with me. You want them to have more say, I guess. They're with you based on what I am reading here. You know, within decent amount of say, you don't want him to have complete control, but you feel like me that he should have more say in the players that come in.
Yeah, he definitely needs a bigger say. I think the fact that the likes of Jallo has come in, the problem with that signing was that Slavisa came out straight away basically and said that he wasn't good enough for his own side. Whereas he has apparently checked all the things off this list that is there, the two box system.
Yep.
But I think he needs to be able to bring players to the table, or a list of players to the table, and have a positive discussion with, whether that's with Tony Khan, or whoever it is now in charge of the statistics at the club, rather than bringing players and just being given, no, 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 you're not having him, you're not having him. That doesn't work for me. And I'm sure it was so frustrating for Jokanovic to have that. The door essentially slammed in his face whenever he brought players to the table. Even if those players might not be people we get in the end, I think he needs to have a much bigger say than what he seemingly has over the past two windows.
Okay, excellent there. Well, yeah, you know, listen, we're not there, you know, we're speculating about what's going on there, but it just seems that Slavisa, like you mentioned, was unhappy. This is our speculative view on this, but now that Craig Klein is not there, I see this as an opportunity to potentially give him the players that he's looking for, give him more say, make it a group decision. But I think Slavisa, you know, I'm not in that room. I don't know how much say he has, but I think they need to be catering more players to what he needs with you. Before I go to Max, I want to talk about that, because I don't know if many of these players were players that were built to play the system that he needs to play, that he wants the club to play. Do you understand where I'm going on this? I think that there were some players that were brought in because they fit a certain model, but did they fit the way that Jokanovic wants to play? Do you get where I'm going on that?
Yeah, I do. I think Slavisa has a very clear idea of how he wants his teams to play. And I think I wrote an article recently about that, the idea he wants to focus primarily on the wingers or the wing-backs,
right,
to be the guys in charge of putting the ball actually into the box. And it means, unfortunately for us, because we look at it and think, well, we need a striker, we need someone who's actually going to hit the back of the net. I think that with Slav's system, maybe we actually need slightly less of that, because the focus is going to be on the wingers and the wing backs. But I do think that there was players being brought in because they fit a computer system, whereas they weren't going to be able to fit in with what Slavisa wanted to do.
Right.
But on the other hand, you then get some players who actually just clearly don't look good enough, and they've been brought in against his will, and he doesn't want to use them, but right. They're on the bench because we've no other option.
Very interesting. Max, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on this part of Livia's article and our discussion here.
Yeah, you know, the thing with this whole transfer debacle that kind of ties into the earlier parts of our discussion is that, let's say we do, the board does decide to sack Slavisa. What manager is going to want to come into the system when Slavisa made it very public that he doesn't have full control, that players he's wanted has been rejected? What manager is going to want to come in to Fulham in this environment? I think this negativity around the transfers is really going to scare off a lot of our top targets if we are going to sack Slavisa. So that's a worrying concern. And the fact that Slavisa has stayed in it here when he's starting to leave, or there have been reports he might walk away, is also worrying. So this whole thing, in the beginning, when it all came out, I was more neutral, more accepting of the policy. I generally see statistics in football as a good thing, in that it can help with analytics, like it has done in American sports. It can come over to the European game. But over time, it's become more rigid and less helpful in my eyes. And
Max,
it's going
to
hurt in general.
Right. That's my issue. I'm not against analytics and statistics. But like Lydia was talking about, you can have a player that looks great on the computer. It looks great. But can he play the way that Slavisa needs him to play? And that's my issue, because it can also pass the scouting part of it. The scouting can look good. It can look great. But is enough thought being brought into the equation of, this is how we play, this is how our manager wants to play, we need a player that can do it this way? That's my point, Max.
Yeah, certainly. I completely agree with that. And we'll see what happens in January. But I think everything building up to the January transfer window is also not going to be great, because I feel January transfer window signings rarely come through to the full potential.
Sure.
I think last season, who do we get in January? We got Cyriac. I think he scored one goal in his entire spell here. I think Petsos, the other center midfielder,
yes.
The Greek center midfielder, I don't even know if he played the 90 minutes once. So that's what we're going off, basically. That is our past. I don't think you're going to have too high expectations for this window when it comes around.
Okay. Very interesting there, Max. All right. All right, guys, let's move on. Now I want to bring up a topic that Giannis and I were talking about. Giannis has been on this kick for, I want to say, about a month in regards to David Button and Marcus Bettinelli. He came out after this match. We did the post-match show, and he believes that a change is needed, a change to Marcus Bettinelli over David Button. This has more to do with change. You know, he thinks that a change could change potentially the culture. Sometimes you need that. I actually agree with that. It's funny, because for the most of the season, Lydia, I do think that David Button has been the player of the season. There have been some matches where he hasn't been the greatest. That Sheffield United match wasn't great. And then we could talk about what happened against Brentford. But beyond that, he's been very good. But my point, and I actually understand where Giannis is going on this, sometimes you need to make a drastic change. This would be a drastic change. It did happen last season after the Derby County match. He made a change, and I think it made a difference. So that's why I'm wanted to bring this to the table, because I understand where Giannis is coming on this. I think this is more to do with change rather than, well, in my mind, it has more to do with change. Giannis might feel differently between Button and Bettinelli, but for me, I see it as an opportunity to give someone else a chance, not give up on Button, but I see Bettinelli, give him a chance. Let's see if he can reinvigorate the squad. So that's where I'm going on that. How about you?
Well, I would agree that change is needed here. But not necessarily just for the sake of change. I don't think Bettinelli ever should have lost his spot as our starting man. I know he was injured at the start of the season, but I think as soon as that injury was sorted, I think he should have been back in the side. Now, I have a couple of reasons for this. You know, for me, I watch football every week, more than that if I can, and a lot of the time it's live at home. And my problem with Button is that I don't think he's very commanding. for me, I need to be able to basically hear the goalkeeper over everyone. Okay. Shouting instructions to his defenders, to his midfielders. He can see the whole pitch, your goalkeeper, and can have a real say in that, and needs to be someone who has a real vocal presence in the side. I just don't see that from Button. I haven't seen it any time I've been at a match live, or any time I've watched on TV. I don't. It's hard to really get the full picture when you're not watching it live. But any time I have watched them live, I just think that the Button does not have that presence that you really need as a goalkeeper. My other issue is there are far too many mistakes. I mean, I do really feel for him, because I think in the preseason he made some terrible mistakes, which essentially didn't really matter. It's preseason, and a lot of people got on his back for that, and he's come back, and he's fair play to him. I think some of the lack of support for him was very vocal at some of the opening games, whereas he's been very professional about it. But at the same time, there's been too many mistakes that have changed games. And that's the difficulty about being a goalkeeper, is if you make a mistake, it more often than not it'll cost your team. Whereas if a striker makes a mistake, well, you know, it doesn't really affect it at the end of the day, as long as he puts the next one away, really. But with Button, there's too many of them. And I think that combines with the fact he just doesn't have a very vocal command and presence behind our defence. I think it's a reason why I would rather have Bettinelli, because I do, even though there might not be a massive difference in their ability level, Bettinelli is commanding. You can hear him from wherever you are.
It's a wonderful point with you. While you were saying this, I was trying to picture the team out there on the pitch, and you bring up a valid point, and I'll get Max's thoughts on this. I just want to go right back to you on this. While you're saying this, I'm thinking, well, who has a commanding presence out there? It's actually Kevin McDonald. But you should be hearing that from your goalkeeper as well. When you're watching it, and I know I've seen it and I've heard it, just watch Kevin McDonald. He has that commanding presence that you want Button to have.
Yeah, I mean, you need it further up the pitch as well.
Exactly.
I mean, all the best teams in the world will have someone in, whether it's defence, midfield, who's going to rally everyone, and is going to be that real leader. But at the same time, I think it's essential from your goalkeeper to be yelling instructions. I mean, I have a sporting background, you know, not football, but hockey. And I, for my whole time during school, was playing as a defender. If I had a keeper behind me who wasn't going to be, who I couldn't hear, that worried me as a defender. Even if it was subconsciously, I was aware that I didn't have a voice behind me to sort of, you know, tell me to watch out for anything or to get me into position. And the problem with our defence at the minute is that we don't have a particularly commanding figure in our back four. So that needs to be from the goalkeeper. It needs to be there, even if it's just a reassuring voice behind everything. But right. Button just doesn't do that.
That's a wonderful point there, Lydia. Max, I want to go to you. I want to get your thoughts on what Lydia just shared here. She's talking about David Button not having a commanding presence. And while she's talking about it, I'm thinking about it, she's right. He doesn't have this vocal presence. He has been making some mistakes. And I was thinking about this, again, while she's talking about, thinking about a goalkeeper that we know very well that actually has that commanding presence. And I think it makes a difference. Someone like Tim Howard. Tim Howard has that commanding presence, that vocal presence. Maybe it is something that we're missing, that back four is missing. They're missing someone to be vocal behind them. It's a very interesting point. I want to get your thoughts on this Bettinelli versus Button debate and what Lydia just brought to the table about the fact that Button does not have a commanding presence because he's just not vocal enough.
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. Of course, his mistakes, as we've seen this season and past season, more so. That's the worst part for me. I think the commanding part is a factor, but when he makes those egregious mistakes that lead to really poor goals that we shouldn't be conceding, that's what hurts Fulham the most. And I made this point on a past podcast, is that when we did make that change from Button to Bettinelli last season, it was immediately after the Derby County match, which we lost 4-2 away, one of Budden's worst matches in a full shirt. And immediately after that match, that is when our results picked up, and that's when we rode that amazing form into the playoffs. So there is it's not like saying it's this. I think a lot of people are saying it's this radical switch. It's not really that radical. I mean, Felice has done it in the past, and it's actually really proven to improve the team morale and improve team performances over a time period. So I think it's something that should be considered very seriously by Felice. He made it in the past, and after some poor results, I think he should make it again, considering as well we've only kept the clean sheet against Millwall was the first clean sheet since August 26th, I think. I know. Since the Ipswich match in late August. So when you're not keeping clean sheets, when you're making mistakes, when you're on a poor run of form, it's the defense, yes, it's also the keeper. So make a change in the back line, make a change in front of goal. I think that's what he has to do. I think it's a reasonable decision to make.
I agree with that. And Max, I want to go back to you because Lydia brought up another good point that I hadn't thought of in a while, and she's 100% right about this. What did Marcus Bettinelli do to lose his job? He ended the season as the goalkeeper. That's a very good point, Max. Well, what are your thoughts about that?
I think that's a good point. I think it is something that should be thought about. And I think this takes us into Luis's mindset, which might explain why he's reluctant to make the change this time around.
Yep.
I think he saw Bettinelli as a short-term fix last season. I think he said, I'm going to sit Button for the match immediately after Derby. This is last spring. And we're going to get a response out of him, and then I'll put him back in next match or the match after that. But then I think what he realized is Bettinelli brought this really boost to the squad, so he kept him in there for the end of the season. And what Slavisa thought started this season is that was just a temporary thing. Now I'm going to put Button's my number one, which I think is a bit flawed, but I think that might explain why Bettinelli didn't get the number one job this time around.
Okay, very interesting. And listen, there have been comments from Slavisa backing Button, so that also lends me to feel that this is his goalkeeper, but I'm still thinking that maybe he should consider a change because Bettinelli, I thought, did a decent job, and it goes back to last season. I'm glad that Lydia brought that to my attention because I completely forgot about that. It's just one of those points, like, well, what did he do to lose his job? He didn't, but Max, you brought up a good point. It could be just a preference situation with Slavisa that he prefers Button. So we'll have to see and see if there is a change. But I'm not against the change. I think sometimes you need a change. I think this is one of these times where I think a change is needed. So I'm glad that we're having this discussion. All right, guys, before we break down this upcoming match against Birmingham City, I have one more topic. And it's about Tom Kearney, the very interesting article on the London Evening Standard. It is entitled, "Fully Committed. Tom Kearney Says He Loves Playing at Fulham Amid Fresh Links with Newcastle United." And I'm just going to read from this article from James Benge, and then we're going to talk about it. Tom Kearney insists he is fully committed to Fulham despite renewed speculation over a move to Newcastle United in the upcoming transfer window. The Scotland international has been one of Magpies bosses Rafa Benitez's top targets, and Newcastle saw a £20 million bid for the Scotland international rejected in January last year. Kearney responded to that interest in July by putting pen to paper on a contract extension that will tie him to the Cottagers until 2021 with the option of a further season. Reports in the Northeast last month claimed that Kearney remained a leading target for Benitez despite a stuttering start to the championship season for both Kearney and Fulham. The 26-year-old remains committed to Craven Cottage. Okay, here's a quote from Tom Kearney. Quote, "You can't put a price on happiness. Last season, I was extremely happy on and off the pitch. And that's when you play your best football. I wanted to show my happiness to the fans, let them know that I want to be here and try to take Fulham forward. I love playing football here. That's what I want to do. I feel responsibility to Fulham. It's been great ever since I arrived. I enjoy playing football. I really enjoy playing it at the Cottage, and long may it continue." Kearney does, however, appreciate the ongoing interest from Benitez, who has made no secret of his desire to add goals and creativity to a Newcastle side who has scored just 14 goals in the first 15 league games of the season. Quote, this is also from Kearney, "It's a massive accolade that Rafa Benitez wants me. It's a pat on the back to myself, I guess, to know that other managers appreciate what I'm doing." All right. Lydia, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on this. I thought it was great to get these quotes from Kearney. You can't put a price on happiness. This is something that I've argued, that players like Sessegnon and Kearney, they want to be at Fulham. And I know that you have the Premier League teams after them, but sometimes players just happy where they are. So I think this is one of those cases. Lydia, your thoughts on this article?
Yeah, I mean, I think Kearney clearly showed last season that he loved the club. I think some of his celebrations after certain goals, it just sort of looked like the guy was having the time of his life. And we need players like that. We absolutely, that you know, what he has said in that article, you know, you can't put a price on it. When you're happy at your club, that's when you play your best football. It's reassuring that he's come out and said that, because I think at this time you're always going to get those rumours, whether the rumours are concrete or not, whether there's something actually behind them is a different matter. But I think whenever that question is put to him in a time whenever, you know, results aren't great on the pitch, I think the fact he's coming out and saying that is definitely very positive. I think he would, if he didn't get promoted this time around, it might be different. But I think the sort of person he is, I don't think he would want to leave halfway through something. So maybe in the summer it's going to be something else. But at the minute, I think I certainly don't think he'd be leaving in January.
I totally agree with that, Lydia. Over to you, Max.
Yeah, I can't see him leaving either. If he's going to leave, I feel like it would be in the summer. And he turned down the massive money move to the Premier League in his native north of England. So I think that kind of shows a lot about how much Kearney values Fulham and is willing to stay here amid Premier League interest. So if he didn't go then, I don't think he'll go now. And that being said, he's probably still a bit of an injury is probably still affecting him. So I don't think Newcastle want him in this state just yet.
Okay, excellent. All right. Great show so far, guys. But let's move on. Let's now preview the upcoming match against Birmingham City. And like I do on most preview shows, Max, I'll start with you, and I'll just go through our stats comparison that I get from WhoScored.com with several categories where both teams are in the league and see if we can find a pattern. So let's start where Birmingham City are with goals. They are last, Max, with only 10 in the league so far. They've only scored 10 goals. Fulham are tied at 13th with 26 shots per game. Birmingham City are 18th with 11.5. Fulham are tied at 8th with 13.4. This is an interesting stat, Max. Aerials 1, Birmingham City are 2nd in the league at 28.6. Fulham are dead last at 13.3. Possession, Birmingham City are tied at 19th at 46.8. Fulham are 3rd in the league at 55.4. Passing success, Birmingham City are 17th at 70.0, and Fulham are 1st in the league at 82.6. Crosses per game, Birmingham City are tied at 16th with 17. Fulham are tied at 19th with 16. Long balls, Birmingham City are tied at 14th with 76. Fulham are dead last at 58. And short passes, Birmingham City are 18th at 291. Fulham are 2nd at 457. All right, Max, what stands out to you from the stats comparison I just gave you? Does it give you an idea of how this match could be played?
Yeah, you know, it tells you a bit, but for me, the most it tells me is how poor Birmingham have been this season. You know, there's not really a style you see revealed by those stats. Normally, teams with low possession, as Birmingham has, attempt a lot of long balls, but the stats he's shown, they're in the bottom half of the league for long balls attempted, and their passing percentage is poor. They don't have much possession. They don't take many shots, and as you said, they scored the fewest goals in the league. So what it tells me is that Birmingham City are having a pretty dire season. Of course, the poor start thanks a lot to the mismanagement of Harry Redknapp. But again, I think what it tells you is that the match tomorrow really should be a match Fulham is winning. Birmingham do not pose much of a threat.
Okay, very good there, Max. All right, Lydia, I'm going to go to you in a second. I'm going to share some information from WhoScored.com again. This is characteristics of Birmingham City, just to give you an idea of their strengths and weaknesses in style of play. But before I do that, I'm just going to give you an idea of where both teams are right now? League table. Let's look at where both teams are. Fulham are currently 15th. We have 6 victories, 8 draws, 6 losses. We've scored 26. We've given up 27. We're in a -1 goal differential and are on 26 points. Birmingham City are 22nd. We have 4 victories, 4 draws, 12 losses. They've only scored 10. They've given up 29. They're on a -19 goal differential and are on 16 points. Obviously, scoring goals has been an issue for Birmingham City. Here are team characteristics. Their strengths, very strong at aerial duels and defending set pieces. Their weaknesses, they are weak at keeping possession of the ball, defending against through ball attacks. They're very weak at finishing scoring chances, defending against long shots, defending against skillful players, defending counterattacks, and avoiding individual errors. Their style of play, take long shots and attack down the right. Just want to mention some key players for them for this upcoming match, players that Fulham fans will know. Hota is playing with them, so that there's a definite player to look out for. That's a player that I'm a little bit concerned in. A player to watch, especially on set pieces, is Cottrell. Cottrell's a player that I have actually wanted at Fulham for a very long time. His delivery on set pieces is excellent, so that's a player to look out for in this match as well. All right, over to you, Lydia. Your thoughts on the information I shared with you about Birmingham City and your thoughts on this game?
Well, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because Birmingham were in the Premier League with us back then, and now, you know, they are. I mean, I would be very surprised if they didn't go down, to be honest. But what's interesting there is that despite their goals for being absolutely terrible with 10, yep, they've only actually conceded 2 more than we have.
I've noticed that.
Which is a bit worrying.
It's a good point. It's a good point, Lydia. I noticed that.
Yeah, it's not great or not for us at all. I mean, that's terrible. Our goals against is poor. But I think it's one of those ones I would use who scored quite a bit as well. And it's one of those ones on paper you're sort of rubbing your hands together thinking happy days. But I think in reality we struggle with teams really being very physical against us. So I think it's definitely, as much as I would like to say that, you know, we're going to get the 3 points no problem, I think it's going to be a much harder game than we think, especially against a team who are desperate for points, much more desperate for points than we are. And, you know, it's one of those things, isn't it? We, unfortunately, at the minute, haven't been very good at home. So it's a matter of trying to deal with the whole situation and not just the 11 players in front of us. But we'll see what happens. I do think we're much stronger than them. I mean, we are. But it's just whether we play to the best of our ability or not. Who knows?
Is your fear similar to mine, Lydia, that this could be a similar match to, say, when Fulham play Bolton or Millwall?
Yeah, it could be. I think they might, you know, that every team this season has tried to, you know, stop us playing our game, which has been our problem at the end of the day. You know, we haven't been able to do what we did last season because of the way teams have set up against us. A team like Birmingham coming to the Cottage, they're definitely going to do that. They're going to try and put the boot in a wee bit, ruffle us up, and we haven't responded to that this season. So far, anyway. We haven't responded very well, anyway. So we'll have to see what happens. I think as well, David Stockdale, you know, a former Fulham favourite, is with them. And the past few games, he has been superb for them. Some of the saves he's pulled off have been remarkable. So we are going to have to hit the target a lot, and if we're hoping to get the ball past him tomorrow. And he's going to want to play well against his former club. Of course he is.
It's so a great point.
It's going to be a tough one. It's one we should win on paper. But as we've said so many times, it's not all about what's on paper, I suppose.
I totally agree there. Lydia, okay, Max, over to you. Key players to look out for with Birmingham City. I've already mentioned Cottrell and Hota. I'm glad that Lydia mentioned David Stockdale, because if I remember correctly, David Stockdale has actually played fairly well against Fulham. So that's a concern. Who concerns you from Birmingham City for this match for Fulham?
Yeah, you know, as you mentioned, Hota, of course, we were supposedly linked with him over the summer. Didn't sign him. Another player that worries me is Jeremy Boga. He's the only Birmingham player to score in the four-way matches since Steve Cotterill took charge. So he'll be one to look out for. And a bit of a twist this week for you, Ross and Lydia. I have some match stats to bring to you, courtesy of the BBC. So Birmingham City's goal tally of just 10 and 20 league games is the lowest in the entire Football League.
Wow.
So all 72 clubs, Birmingham City are the worst, lowest scores. Another one, Fulham have not kept back-to-back home league clean sheets within the same season since October of 2014. So that is remarkable. That's the first season we're back in the championship. And a final one, which is pertinent to what we talked about earlier about Tom Kearney. He hasn't assisted an entire goal in 11 matches this season.
Wow.
And last season he was second most in the league with 10 assists. So there are some stats that tell us a lot about Fulham's season so far and a lot about Birmingham. So should be interesting to look forward to.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that, Max. All right. Lydia, I'm going to go back to you. I want to talk about your key players for Fulham, players that need to have very good matches for us to get all 3 points. I don't want to talk about draw. Fulham need all 3 points. So who needs to step up? Before I get that from you, I just want to mention that at Slavisa's presser, he mentioned the players that are out. Lucas Piazon and Floyd Ayite are out. But everyone else, I believe Teo Eden is also going to be unavailable for this match. But beyond that, all other players should be available for selection. So hopefully we will be seeing Tim Ream because Dennis Odoi is suspended for this game. But Ryan Fredericks is not. There was a little misconception that Ryan Fredericks would be suspended, but he is not because of the way that the yellow cards time of the season fall. So he's fine. He will play in this game. He should play in this game unless Slavisa changes something, which I don't expect him to. All right, Lydia, over to you. Who are your key players for Fulham?
Well, I mean, you always have to say Tom Kearney, don't you? I think the games where he's really shown up have been the games where we have played our best. But I do think that defensively we need to step up altogether. I think it's a real shame that Odoi's suspended because I think when he's been on the pitch this season, he's done very well. And that's where the selection headache comes for me a wee bit. Because I would much rather play Ryan Sessegnon as a left winger.
I'm right there with you, Lydia. You stole my thunder. I was going to say that. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I just don't know what's going to happen then. I think, I would imagine Jukanovic is going to play him in defence, but we'll come to that in a wee minute anyway.
Yep.
I also think that up front we need to, you know, it's maybe stating the obvious a wee bit, but, you know, the amount of shots we've had, and the lack of goals maybe we've scored for the amount of time we're shooting isn't great, and it isn't what we were doing last year we were scoring for fun. So I think up front our wingers need to be on form tomorrow.
Okay, excellent. All right, Max, back over to you. What do Fulham need to do to win this match?
It's a good question. As you guys mentioned before, it's going to be similar to the Bolton and Millwall matches. When a team at the bottom half of the table comes to play us at home, we seem to struggle. So, I mean, we saw the same things against before Millwall and Bolton. We have to start out early, get the other goal, and press on. And, you know, it really needs our match to be achieved that. And Millwall, we have to wait until basically the stroke of halftime to get a fortuitous penalty in order to take the lead. And even then, when we took the lead, we just hung on to it for dear life. So we just need to different approach than what we've done those past two matches because obviously it hasn't worked. You just love to get an early goal, as we've seen, and hopefully build up the confidence, build up the goal scoring. Again, I say, Rui Font, go on, get a goal, mate. do it for the confidence, and then the back line. This, if you're ever going to keep a clean sheet, it's against a side that's only scored 10 goals all season in 20 matches. So this is the opportunity.
Okay, excellent. All right, guys, I want to get both of your starting 11, what you would do if you were Slavisa. Lydia, I'm going to start with you. I'm with you, Lydia. I would rather see Ryan Sessegnon in midfield than at left back, but something tells me you're going to be forced to play him at left back. But, hey, maybe we'll have a Rafa Soares sighting. That would be interesting, wouldn't it? But I want to get your starting 11.
Well, if I was in the hot seat tomorrow, I would change it up a bit, I have to say.
Okay.
I would have Marcus Bettinelli as our man between the sticks. And I would, just because Odoi's not available now, I would have Rafa Soares in at left back.
Okay.
We haven't seen enough of him for me to be thinking, yes, we need him playing every week. But in this case, I think Sessegnon can be a liability defensively. And I think his strengths are playing further forward. So I'm not going to put him in left back. I will stick with Ream and Callis as our back two. I think we struggled a bit without Ream. I think he's a bit more commanding than Callis is in there. I think that as a partnership, they work better than if they're playing with somebody else. And I think Frederick's definitely, we need to keep him in there. I think he's been, sounds strange as he's a defender, but he's been one of our biggest attacking threats this season. In terms of midfield, it's another tricky one, but I would have McDonald playing in his defensive role, and I would have Norwood and Kearney. Johansson, I think, has been struggling for form, and I think he just needs to maybe have a bit of confidence before we start him again. I think have him on the bench and have him come on, and maybe, you know, when we're hopefully a couple of goals up, maybe it'll help him hit his confidence levels. And then up front, as our wingers, I would go for Ryan Sessegnon on the left and Shea Ojo on the right, and then with Rui Font as our target man. So we'll see what happens. I don't know if Jukanovic will agree with me, but those are the 11 men I'd go for tomorrow.
Well, that's a very interesting starting 11. And one decision that you made, I'm actually, I tend to agree with you, and I'm a big Stefan Johansson fan, but he hasn't been at his best. But I also like the job that Oliver Norwood has done. So I understand why you went, and Oliver Norwood, I think, has been very good for Fulham. So I understand why you went with Norwood over Johansson. Say for this particular game, I'm hoping we see Johansson back to what he was. It's funny because when I talk to friends of mine that follow Celtic, they say his second season, he fell off as well. So I don't know if this is a Johansson thing, an injury situation with him, that he's still getting back to fitness, because I believe he was dealing with a groin injury. But he just hasn't been the same player. So, Lydia, I agree with your move of playing Norwood over Johansson. I actually do agree with that. Max, over to you. You're starting 11.
So I'm going to go with the same move that Lydia did in goal. I'm going to go with Bedinelli in place of Budden.
Wow.
Just to get that, you know, as we talked about, just got to do it. Just got to make the change. Hopefully that will revitalize the defense and get that clean sheet we need. Then back four, obviously Adore's out. If Ream's fit, it has to be Ream and Callis at the heart of defense, with Suarez and Fredericks as your wing backs. I'm going to push Sessegnon for the forward, but for now the midfield, I'm going to take out Norwood from last match starting 11 and put in Luca Della Torre. I think the young American has shown a lot of promise in recent matches.
Okay.
I think if you're going to give him a start, I think it's probably the best place to do it is a home match against a team that's, you know, in the bottom three. That's when it's not the biggest match of the season, but it's a match where I think he can maybe show his creative qualities really well. I think that's a good opportunity for him. And for the front three, I'm going to have Roussan leading the line up top to finally get his much-needed goal. And then on the left wing, Jordan Graham. He showed some flashes last match against Brentford, and I think he really deserves his first start of the season. And on the right wing, Sessegnon is going to be on the left and Graham on the right. Sorry.
You are going all over the place, Max. Now, this is a little bit of interest. Lydia, I want to go to you. I want to get your thoughts on his starting 11.
Well, you know what? As much as I think it should either be Norwood or Johansson, I can completely understand where you're coming from with De La Torre. Whenever he has come on in matches, he's actually made a difference.
Yes.
I just think that with our current situation, I would rather we were able to bring him on maybe in the second half where we're a couple of goals up, or give him a start in a cup competition. But you know what? I like the adventure there. I think it's very interesting, and you never know, it could be something that might pay off if he's given a chance.
Yeah, and And then we put in Eden for the Derby match. That, I think that worked quite well when he gave when he handed in the start. So there is kind of precedent with Slavisa doing this with young players in the center midfield. And I'd even argue the Derby match, that was a much more challenging first match for a young player to play in. So.
Okay. Yeah. You guys are both like being bold. I like it. I like these starting 11s. You guys are thinking outside the box a little bit, taking some chances. I like that. Maybe we should get Slavisa to listen to the show. Take your advice. I like that.
Yeah,
all right.
you know what's going to happen, Russ. He's going to play Sessegnon on left back. We're going to have we're probably going to have Jallo up top, 4-4-2. He's going to go back to basics. Kamara will be playing holding mid, you know. Who knows?
Okay, very funny there, Max. All right, let's end the show with our predictions. I'll start with the Cotter's Talk Twitter poll that I did. I had 102 votes. Win was at 56%, draw was at 25%, and loss was at 19%. All right, Max, I'll go to you first for your prediction. What's your prediction for this match?
I'm going to go plain and simple, 2-0 Fulham. Classic result. We're going to keep him out at the back. We're going to get an early goal. And then, you know, around 20 minutes ago, we're going to seal the deal, make it 2-0. Much needed clean sheet and a much needed 3 points.
Okay. Lydia, to you.
Well, the bottom scorers in the whole football league are obviously going to score against Fulham, so I'm going to give them a goal. But I'm going to say 2-1. I think it'll be 1-1 for a while. Then we'll get a goal, maybe 70th minute, maybe, and then wrap it all up shortly after that with 3-1. But we'll see. We'll see.
Okay. All right. Right, Lydia, I'm going to go 3-1. This has been my consistent prediction for most of the shows, as Max knows. I like going 3-1 because 2-1 is too nervy for me. So I'm going to go 3-1. And I just think that this is a great opportunity. But like you, Lydia, we both know that Birmingham City are going to score. So that's why I'm going for no clean sheet.
David Stockdale straight from a goal kick, probably. Something like that.
You could be right. You could be right. It's Fulham's defense, you know, the lack of clean sheets is a major issue. And the fact that we're joking about it just tells you what a major issue that it is. And a team with 10 goals this season could score a goal or dare I say more, would really be embarrassing. So a clean sheet should be the standard for this. But this is Fulham we're talking about. So that's why I'm going 3-1. All right. Great show. Fantastic show, guys. Before we go, Lydia, I want to thank you so much for coming back on to Cottage Talk. Just tell everyone how they can find you on Twitter and where they can read you.
Yeah, so you can read anything that I write on hamien.com. So that's Dan Crawford's the editor there. So if you're a regular Fulham listener or Cottage Talk listener, you'll come across Dan. And you can find me on Twitter @lids_Campbell.
Okay. And Max, just tell everyone how they can follow you on Twitter and read you in several different places, right?
Yeah, so you can follow me at Twitter at Max P. Cohen. You can read me on College's Confidential blog. Yeah, and I'm write pretty frequently there. And I'm also doing some writing for some other outlets, but not Fulham related.
So. Okay, excellent. Well, listen, guys, thank you so much for joining me today, but it is time to wrap it up. For Lydia Campbell and Max Cohen, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cotter's Talk.